Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the program, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the South Bay Show, South Bay Spotlight, on Thursday, July 14th. The South Bay Show is brought to you by the Academy of Foreign Languages. If you have any interest in learning a new language or brushing up on existing language skills, you should know about the Academy of Foreign Languages. Located in Palos Verdes, the Academy of Foreign Languages specializes in the art of communication. Their mission is to provide the finest language instruction possible. They recognize that each student has distinctive needs and craft their teaching technique to optimize an individual's particular learning skills. At the Academy of Foreign Languages, they strive to create a comfortable environment conducive to learning. So whether you're learning a new language or would simply like to converse in your native tongue, the Academy of Foreign Languages can accommodate you. For additional information, visit their website at academyofforeignlanguages.com, that's all spelled out, or call 310-975-4133. My name is Jackie Balestra, and I'm sitting in as host this week for Joe Terry. Thank you so very much for tuning in and listening. Live, love, laugh, and leave a legacy. That's what we do here in the South Bay of Los Angeles, and I can't imagine a better place to do just that. Now, you can find out more about us on Facebook at facebook.com/The South Bay Show, or visit our website at www.thesouthbayshow.com. Persistence, passion, principle, and purpose. That's what we talk about here on the South Bay Show. And joining me this morning is a very special guest co-host and man about town, Michael Jenkins, founder of SouthBayFoodies.com. Now, Michael moved to the South Bay in 2003 and immediately fell in love with the community. One of his favorite parts of the South Bay was the growing dining scene. Restaurants, happy hours, food trucks, you name it, Michael was ready to try them all out. In 2008, he started his website, SouthBayFoodies.com, to document his dining adventures around El Segundo, Manhattan Beach, Torrance, and the rest of the South Bay cities. Since then, he's seen the South Bay food scene grow to new heights, including craft brewing, destination dining, and high-end festivals. Michael is married to Nicole Jenkins, a healthy living blogger who keeps him in shape by dragging him to the gym to work off all the happy hour specials. They have two adorable teenage daughters and enjoy traveling around the region as a family. And this summer, they're planning trips to Lake Tahoe and Las Vegas. Welcome back to the program, Michael, and thank you so much for the assist this morning.
Hey, Jackie, thanks so much for having me. It's my pleasure to be here. I love the South Bay Show, so it's always a good time to get on the show and hang out with you.
Well, thank you so much. And speaking of hanging out, we've been doing quite a bit of that lately, haven't we?
Yeah, it seems like everywhere I go and every time I turn around, I see you. But that means that I'm like one of the cool kids now. It means I'm in the right place.
Well, you're the foodie guy. You and Brian are the foodie guys. So anything that involves food around town, you guys are always involved. We ran into each other at the new Aloft Hotel a couple of weeks ago, right?
Yeah, right there in El Segundo on Sepulveda. And it's a lovely space. I like what they've done with the lobby and kind of the entry area there. And we got to see their pool area, one of their kind of meeting spaces downstairs. That was pretty cool. So, yeah, I'm excited to go back there for another event or even just to hang out at the bar in the lobby.
You know, I was impressed with everything too, but what is that, an Olympic-sized pool they have in there? It's huge.
Yeah, the pool was pretty big. I was impressed by that. I mean, and it's kind of secluded. They've got the palm trees around it. And, I mean, I guess one of the benefits of some of the suites that they have on the ground floor is that you could pretty much walk out of your door and be right there at the pool area. So, I mean, that's kind of swank.
Yeah, poolside rooms. Yeah, they did a really nice job with it. And then, of course, I saw you, was it last week, up at Terranea at Marcel.
Yeah, indeed. And that was for the kickoff of Dine Around the Peninsula, which is starting tomorrow. And that's like it's the peninsula's own little restaurant week, where all the restaurants that are participating are going to have special fixed-price meals. I believe they're going to be lunch and dinner. And, yeah, it was really cool to be there, number one. Just hanging out at Terranea or even going to Terranea is I mean, like in my intro, you mentioned destination dining. That is a South Bay destination because there's – well, I mean, it's an L.A. destination because there's no place else in L.A. like that where you're right on the water, you're totally secluded, and, I mean, the staff there, they do a great job of taking care of all your needs. And for that particular event, it was really cool to meet some of the chefs that are going to be participating in the Dine Around the Peninsula.
Yeah, you know, chefs, restaurant managers, you know, their sponsors were there, the media was there, and there are several local communities that are doing this Dine Around. I know Torrance does one, and I think it all started with Dine LA, which is a Los Angeles countywide. They started it a couple of years ago to get people into different neighborhoods, to different restaurants, basically fixed price menus. So you can get you can go to these what might be a very fancy, expensive restaurant, you know, that you never could afford before, or maybe you know you couldn't get a reservation, and then you can try their food at a discounted rate. And so the PV Chamber is doing their own version of that, and I think it's great. I just think it's terrific.
Yeah, indeed, because, I mean, and I think their slogan is find your next favorite restaurant or something along those lines.
Yes.
So, yeah, it just kind of gives people, you know, permission and an opportunity to break out of their shell and at a very, you know, approachable entry, low price in your neighborhood, you get to try a new restaurant that maybe you've been thinking about, maybe somebody told you about it, maybe you didn't know anything about it, and you go on the website and you look at their menu, and you're like, oh, man, that sounds really good, and you just go and check it out. Not too much cash out of pocket, and you're not paying, you know, a lot of cash and gas to get across town. It's right here, and it's local, so that's always been
a Yeah, no, it's huge. But let me ask you something real quick. Do you find that this is my issue. I go to a restaurant and I find a favorite dish, and when I'm in the mood for that, that's where I go. And I get very tunnel vision like that. You know, I mean, there are certain dishes at certain restaurants and that's what I go there for. And I don't necessarily expand my horizons. Do you do that?
Yeah. And, I should say I don't do that, but my wife does to a fault. Like, we will go to a restaurant, and one example I'll give is Eureka Tasting Kitchen in Hawthorne. They have a burger that they call their San Francisco Fig Burger, or Fresno Fig Burger, that has kind of like this fig sauce on basically a really good bacon cheeseburger. And she also likes to get a salty dog cocktail, which is basically grapefruit juice and vodka. And if we go there and they're out of either one of those things, I mean, we love them to pieces. We might just turn around and walk away because she's not going to stray off that menu. I'm like, well, hey, they've got, you know, the wonderful homemade chicken and biscuits. They've got, you know, steak. They've got all this other stuff, which I love. I will, you know, check out a lot of different items on their menu. But she loves that burger, like I said, to a fault. If we sit down, they say, oh, you know, we're out of the fig sauce today. Then we'll say, you know, we'll have a drink, but we're not going to order anything.
So. I get it. No. But, you know, Michael, you're well aware that Joe and I love to talk about food on this show. I mean, literally, it creeps into every conversation we have. I mean, we could be discussing insurance, and suddenly we're talking about a new restaurant, all right?
Yeah,
but today,
exactly.
Today, it's all about food. Today, it's all about food and the exploding South Bay food scene. Michael, who's our guest this morning?
Well, our guest this morning is Demi Stevens, proprietor of Ortega 120 and Hey 19. As one of the most renowned mixologists in the hospitality industry, Demi is a force to be reckoned with. She has successfully created cocktail menus that utilize unique ingredients that complement her restaurant's dynamic food menus. Demi's first personal restaurant endeavor, Ortega 120, located in Redondo Beach, currently houses the best classic margarita as determined by LA Weekly. Ortega 120 has also been honored with awards such as Diner's Choice winner, Best Dinner Dates on a Budget, and Top 10 Mexican Restaurants in Los Angeles. Her most recent venture, Hey 19 Public House, is a rustic American-themed restaurant and bar featuring craft cocktails and new American, organic conscious, and comfort food. K19 K19 opened its doors in Torrance in late 2014 and was instantly named one of the best new restaurants of 2014 by Easy Reader. Just last week, USA Today even named K19's Spicoli Burger one of the 10 best burgers in Los Angeles. With her whiskey in a cup attitude, mixology brilliance, the ability to understand both front and back house management of a restaurant, and dedicated guest and staff following, it's no wonder why every restaurant Demi touches turns to gold. This morning, we're going to get updates on Ortega 120 and K19, learn about some current restaurant trends and what's new and delicious in the South Bay dining scene. Welcome back to the program, Demi. We're so glad you could join us this morning.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Happy to be here.
Yeah, well, yeah, Demi's awesome. One of our favorite guests. She's one of the most tuned in people I know when it comes to restaurants in the South Bay. And that's just South Bay from my end. I mean, I'm sure she knows about restaurants elsewhere, but you know me, I stay local. and Demi, I just want to mention one other thing. Esquire Network, not that long ago, named Ortega 120 one of the best bars in America.
Yeah, they came out. They did a big feature. It's actually on. It ran again, I guess, a couple of weeks ago. But they came out, and Bill Burr, who's a big comedian, came with them. And I actually got the best cocktail compliment I've ever gotten from him. He said he drank the margarita, and he said, "Oh, that's dangerous."
Yeah,
that is good.
Yeah, it was a really nice episode. And funny side story, though, the mic wasn't working for part of my part of the filming, and they didn't know for about 2 weeks. And you guys know me pretty well, so my hair color changes fairly often. It's kind of color du jour. And I figured 2 weeks out I was okay. Well, it wasn't, and they needed to come back and film. So my hair color is different. It's a very interesting, very, very interesting segment, because you just see a lot of my chin for part of it.
Oh, goodness. They worked around the hair color change.
They did.
All right.
It's
well, let's get to it, Demi, because I want to start the conversation with kind of big picture stuff. The restaurant business is not an easy career path. There are a lot of great cooks out there that want to share their food with the world, but it takes a lot more than just good food for a restaurant to be successful, and the statistics clearly show that. 9 out of 10 new restaurants fail in their first year. So
correct.
Can you just give us a brief overview of what it takes to have staying power in the restaurant industry?
Well, I mean, there's actually kind of two different answers for that one right now. There's a staying power for what you're doing in the state of California and staying power for what you do outside of California. So staying power inside of California really is, if you have not already been in this business and you're not kind of growing up in this business, don't do it. I do some consultations here and there. I'm not a big fan of doing them, but sometimes I will. But I won't if it's that, you know, I make a really amazing meatloaf, so I need to open a restaurant, or I've always wanted to own a bar. Because I think that people think that it is fun, but people think that it's all fun because you're out on the floor and you're talking to people and you're making drinks, and it is a very social situation to be in. But there's a whole other side. And that other side is administrative and cash flow and dollars. And we are the highest regulated industry in the state of California, restaurants, if you have a liquor license. So there's all kinds of regulations, et cetera. And so what I find often happens is that people will make money, say, as an attorney or an architect or whatever, and then decide, you know what, I've made a bunch of money, I'm going to open a restaurant. And that's really wherein lies the defeat. It is a place that you need to be. When I opened Ortega 120, it was 87 days straight, no less than 12 hours a day.
Wow.
When I opened K19 Public House, it wasn't as bad because I, you know, I was already had a lot of systems in place and knew who my clientele was going to be, et cetera, because, you know, 6.5 years after opening Ortega 120. And they're only a third of a mile from each other. So that was very, very helpful. But that restaurant, I think it was about 60 days straight with no days off, and a minimum of 10 hours a day. And I think that that's really what people aren't realizing when they go in to open those. It's also that, you know, there's, especially nowadays, there are new obstacles. The situation with minimum wage sounds to the layman like, oh, you know, well, that shouldn't be a big deal. But in the state of California, we pay full rate payroll tax on tips. And so it's a huge deal to us. The minimum wage itself isn't, but when you combine that with payroll tax and now workers' comp, you're forking out a lot more money. So if you haven't already been inside of this business to know your ins and outs and how to, you know, change what you're doing with food costs or liquor costs and how to negotiate different deals, et cetera, then you really are setting yourself up to lose whatever money it is that you just put in. Even if your food is good, even if your drinks are good. Because in the end of it, it's not really about those. It's how well you run your business.
And did you grow up in the restaurant business?
My first job was in 1984. I was 15 years old. I was making chicken wings at the beach. I was a fry cook. Yeah. So,
all right, so
as far as growing up, yeah, pretty much. And you see a ton of changes in that. So having gone through those changes, it makes it so that in my head I can go, oh, okay, I need to make this change, or, you know, 15 years ago I did this. And so those things are what helped me to make it successful, or what I've done if I'm consulting for somebody else.
Well, that's
but even outside,
go ahead, Michael.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, I was just going to say, even outside of being a fry cook, though, I mean, if I recall from the last time we spoke, you got a pretty impressive pedigree of training under folks who have succeeded in the restaurant industry themselves. I mean, and I'm sure that
lends
itself to kind of your ability to see, you know, the different places that need management in a restaurant.
Yeah. Well, I was really fortunate. I was a waitress and a bartender for a long time. I also washed dishes, et cetera. So I've been in every single position in a restaurant. But I had, I worked, my first management position was at El Cholo in Santa Monica. And I was really fortunate to be under the Salisburys for that. I still speak to Blair fairly regularly, who's one of the sons, about, you know, restaurant trends and changes and things like that. And then I was under Susan Finnegar and Mary Sue Milliken for a few years. And that was phenomenal because they were women, groundbreaking women in the business. And I think I probably learned more from Susan Finnegar in 3 months than I had learned in the 15 years prior to going to work with her.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I still use what all of them, what Ron Salisbury, who's the patriarch of the El Cholo family, I still use things that he taught me. He gave me my my first Charlie Trotter book when I was in my late 20s. And I actually just had that book out the other day. So there's a lot that I still lean on, but then there's a lot of things now. You know, my mother had a boyfriend when I was a kid who was a French trained chef. And
oh, cool.
He taught me how to cook. And he said a very interesting thing to me. He said, I'm going to teach you all the rules so that you know how to break them. and he didn't mean, which is funny, but he didn't necessarily mean that in a way of, okay, let me send you out to break the rules. You learn your baseline so that you know how you can kind of tweak and venture and, oh, you know, maybe I'll throw a little more cinnamon in this one, or if I put too much baking soda in this, this is what's going to happen, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So the same thing applies to how you run the business itself. When changes happen or changes come, you sit there and go, okay, if I did, you know, if I do this, then this should be my result. So I know my rules, but if I tweak them just a little bit, then
sure.
I can make something else work.
Yeah, as you said, you keep mentioning change. And let's start with Ortega 120. Go back to Ortega 120. You know, it's been a very successful, very popular destination restaurant. You mentioned
mm-hmm.
that it's been open about 6.5 years.
We're actually in our ninth year right now.
Ninth?
Wow.
Ninth year. Okay.
Yeah.
So you're coming up on 10. So how have things changed over the years, specifically at Ortega? Do changes happen organically, or do you see a need, or do you just like to mix things up once in a while?
Yes, and yes. Sometimes there's a need. Right now there are really significant needs. for change, but not menu per se, not drink per se, but operationally. And that's to that's because of the finances involved in the increases in, you know, cost of goods and labor. More importantly, labor. Sometimes it's, you know, that there's a, I'll use the liquor, for instance. I do a lot of infusions now, and I have over the last about 5 years. But in the beginning, I didn't do as much in the way of infusions. I just did a lot of very straightforward cocktails and all tequila. There's also now, there's a vodka margarita, so to speak, on the menu called Oh, You're One of Those. Somebody who rolls into a tequila bar and, you know, I don't drink tequila. What do you have instead? So we have a vodka drink for that. And, you know, we have lots of drinks made with other items. They're just not necessarily a specialty on the specialty cocktail list because it's a tequila focus bar. But in that way, yes. We also did things like separated off and made a secondary menu. So the items aren't any different, but we made it easier for the person coming in and sitting down. If they're a vegetarian, pescatarian, or vegan, we have a separate handheld paper that has all of those items on them so that you don't have to search through. That's a rather extensive food menu. You don't have to search through that menu to find out what it is that you can eat if you're doing any of, if you're in that kind of lifestyle. You can just look at the smaller version and go, okay, I can have this, 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 and this.
And that's
been on need.
That's been a trend I know here in Southern California. I don't know how much that's, you know, extended across the country. It's funny that you mentioned that. Just yesterday, I was invited to Fresh Brothers, you know, Fresh Brothers Pizza. I've never eaten in a Fresh Brothers. I've had their pizza at events because they do a lot of, they support a lot of local education foundations, the schools and stuff. So I've had their pizza, but I was invited in. And I'm looking at the menu, and they had vegan pizza. They had a sausage vegan pizza. They had several items on the menu that were gluten free. So what I decided to do is, you know, pepperoni pizza is pepperoni pizza, right? So I decided to try all of these other menu options. I don't have celiac disease, and I'm not a vegetarian. I do eat a lot of vegetarian. I like vegetables. I like salads and stuff. But it's not a rule. So I decided to sit down and try stuff that I never had any reason to order before. And I have to tell you, what an eye-opener. It was delicious. Mm-hmm. It was delicious. I mean, I could not believe it. It was just a complete eye opener. And you know, so that's on the pizza chain level.
Yes.
How much is that?
I experienced that recently at BJ's because, you know, Zane, my son, plays hockey, and so we travel a lot for hockey. And we went into a BJ's, and a couple of his teammates couldn't have gluten. And I was like, well, what are we doing here? And the mom said, oh, no, they have a great gluten-free pizza. And holy smokes, it was actually really good.
Yeah.
I was surprised, yeah.
Yeah.
But on the pizza end, I'm not a big pizza person.
I was very surprised. It was actually shocking to me. So, but anyway, again, going back to the whole change concept, Michael and I were talking earlier about meeting up at we ran into each other at Terranea for the Dine Around the Peninsula event, and we were speaking with one of the restaurant managers and a chef, and somebody mentioned a local restaurant that Michael and I have been to on several occasions that they just got a new chef, and I was like, oh wow, it seems like every year that restaurant gets a new chef. And the restaurant manager said, yeah, there is really no stability in restaurants. People are constantly moving from this one to this one, or they get discovered at one place and get picked up to go to another place. But your restaurants, you've got a team.
We actually just changed chefs at Hey 19, and we have an exec that's been with us at Ortega 124, I guess about 2.5 years, maybe three. So it does change because these restaurants with Ortega 120 to be under Tom, those guys are learning a lot. And then they'll move on and sometimes come back. So the chef that we have in there right now is a guy named Chris Brown, and he's brilliant. And he was there fresh out of culinary school and under Tommy, and then he went to work with Josiah Citron and with Jose Andres for a while, and then came back to us. And that's been a blast because, you know, it's – what it's done, we don't necessarily change the base of our menu itself. We are in both restaurants, Ortega 120 is myself and Tom, and Hey 19 is me. But with Ortega 120, we have people that have been coming for the last 8-9 years for the exact same menu item. And, you know, very similar to what you were saying earlier. So we don't make we don't make sweeping changes. What we have done, though, is bring up the caliber of what the specials are on the weekends. And those are Chris and what he does with them, obviously under Tom's direction. But he is, you know, he's brought in a lot of really interesting and different ideas to put on the specials. And so that's been a lot of fun. Hey 19, the new chef started about 2 months now ago. The interesting thing that you do with that is you don't announce new chefs, whereas about 5 or 6 years ago you did. And you don't do that now more because of the onset of Yelp and everybody's an expert, right? If you preempt your announcement of a new chef, you will have people that go on who haven't even necessarily been in the restaurant but have now decided that the food is different and often in a negative stance. Once, if you do that, introducing a new chef, and you don't make the announcement, and then you wait until they've been there a couple of months, and then you make the announcement, now nobody's concerned about what's going to happen to the food. Everything's fine. Everything's copacetic. Your favorite dish is still there, but we've added this, we've added that, or we've done it, you know, different things administratively. So the chef I have, the new chef I have at Hey 19 is from the Patina Group. And again, you know, so you're looking, I think that's the most interesting thing about this stuff in the South Bay is that you're picking up chefs that are normally not, or 5 years ago would never have bothered to come into the South Bay. And, you know, the menu that I have specifically at Hey 19 is, you know, everything from fried chicken to foie gras, but it's all very farm to table, all non-GMO, all humane, et cetera, et cetera. And that chef stays inside of that trend. And he was at Café Del Rey for quite a while. And then he's actually brought his fried chicken. So we had him go ahead and change the fried chicken because his fried chicken is, first off, it's phenomenal, and I like to think of myself as a little bit of a connoisseur there. But second, Mayor Garcetti goes wherever he is a few times a week to eat that fried chicken. So
really?
It's a really interesting thing that you have happen with this, you know, this chef who's coming out of downtown LA to bring on that fried chicken and have it have, you know, that kind of interesting following. So it's a really neat trend, I think, now in the South Bay that, you know, happened, I think, really, Ortega 120, I think, really changed a lot of things. We got met with, it was a little bit of a rocky road in the beginning because we were pushing the envelope so very much, especially for where we were. And now with Hey 19, you know, I'll push that envelope right off the table. And it's been a really fun trend. And I think it says a lot about the people of the South Bay. You know, sometimes you read these Yelp reviews and they'll say this is a restaurant that would only survive in the South Bay. And it's kind of a condescending way to look at the South Bay. I mean, it's a very well-educated group of people. They know exactly what they're eating. They know what they're drinking. They'll call me to the table to ask me questions about the food, to ask me questions about the drink. I have my GM at Hey 19 is a sommelier. And she can go to the table and explain any wine that you would ever want, et cetera. So, and this is in a strip mall in Torrance. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I think that the South Bay is very, very receptive and knows exactly what they're ordering. And I think that really recognizing who the clientele is down here is what's important for restaurateurs to do. And I think that that's definitely happening. I think that that started happening more over in the last couple of years, where you do really see some big names coming down here.
It's an exciting time to be in the restaurant business. Listen, we're going to take a short station and commercial break. I'm Jackie Balestra, and you're listening to the South Bay Show, South Bay Spotlight. The topic is the South Bay dining scene, and I've got a couple of experts with me this morning keeping us up to date with the latest restaurant trends. Guest co-host Michael Jenkins of SouthBayFoodies.com and restaurateur Demi Stevens, proprietor of Ortega 120 and Hay 19 Public House. Now, if you'd like to get in on the conversation with a question or a comment, you can give us a call at 714-242-5288. That's 714-242-5288. And right now, we're going to thank a sponsor. This segment of the South Bay Show is brought to you by Your Actualized Visions. A local advertising agency, Your Actualized Visions offers all your advertising needs under one roof. From logo design, business cards, banners, and signage, to online services such as website design, SEO management, promotional videos, reputation management, and loyalty promotions, you name it, and Your Actualized Visions will handle it for you on time and under budget. Built on the needs of their clients, Your Actualized Visions is competitively priced and economical, saving you money and greatly enhancing your bottom line. At Your Actualized Visions, customer service is all local with one point of contact. No more dealing with robo-answering machines, getting the runaround, or speaking to someone in another country. Your Actualized Visions understands your hyper-local advertising needs and focuses on bringing you real clients. They do not buy likes, followers, or fake results. Your campaigns are real, built with real community followers who want to purchase your services and products. The only thing standing in the way of your company's success is you now picking up the phone right now and calling Your Actualized Visions at 310-413-8773. To learn more about what Your Actualized Visions can do for you and your company, visit the website at youractualizedvisions.com. Your Actualized Visions, your dreams today, not someday. All right, we're back with Demi Stevens of Ortega 120 and Hay 19 Public House, and Michael Jenkins sitting in as co-host this morning from SouthBayFoodies.com, and we're getting an executive course here in the restaurant business and what's going on. Demi, Ortega 120, very established, and as I mentioned, a destination restaurant. It just became a destination restaurant, I think. I don't know that that was your original plan, but Hay 19 very quickly became a local spot, like right from the get-go. Was that your plan when you decided to open that restaurant?
It was. I live here. I'm a third of a mile between the two restaurants. So, unfortunately, it's uphill in both directions. So I'm in the little valley. So me and my 6-inch heels can't really do those heels. But initially, yes. What I was finding is that when I was coming home late at night from an event, or if I was doing an off-premise catering or something like that, when you get back down here into the South Bay, there wasn't a whole heck of a lot to eat around the 11, 12, midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning kind of thing. And being in the restaurant business as long as I have, that's kind of 6 o'clock for me. So I thought that it would be really cool to open something that I could serve late. And because I live here, I know what people are eating and drinking, and I have conversations with people. And so it started out, yeah, with the intent of it being local, but it too turned into destination. We are in a flip-flop of Ortega 120. Ortega 120 is about 70% destination diner still. Hay 19 is about 50-50. So I can see that from my open table. Yeah. So for the first about year, it stayed heavy local. And now I have people coming from downtown Los Angeles. I have people coming from the West Side, a lot coming from the West Side. I have people coming from Long Beach, San Pedro, et cetera. I don't think San Pedro is necessarily outside, but Long Beach definitely is. And down into Orange County that are coming up. And that's been a really interesting experience because it's kind of tucked into a little bit of a neighborhood, although just off the, you know, it's right off of PCH. It's not necessarily something that you're going to think to go to, oh, I'm going to drive up from Long Beach and go check out this little restaurant. But it has, and it's very interesting. It has not affected, however, our regular clientele. I mean, I do see some people every single day. They come in after work. They have a cocktail on their way home. They eat dinner there. They pick up food. There's a woman that would come in fairly frequently. She's now on bed rest because she's very, very pregnant with twins. So her husband comes and picks up food because apparently he burns water. And he'll come and bring food to her, and it's all of these different, and it's very interesting because she's having some funny cravings, and so we get some of that. But I mean, it's really a lot of fun. The other really, really fun thing, now that we're talking about the family end of it with Hey 19, is, you know, we have entertainment on Friday and Saturday nights, either or, usually on the Saturday now. And what I found is a lot of families with children, now mine are 24, 19, and 12, but a lot of families are coming in a little bit later, say the 8 or 9 o'clock spot, and then when the band starts to play, you'll have, you know, they usually start around 9:30 or 10 on Saturdays, you'll have entire families with children, not all the time, but sometimes, with their children staying and dancing until 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. And I thought, I was actually really, really happy about that because it's not, you know, before it was a pretty seedy dive bar. And now at 11 o'clock at night, you can walk in there and there's some kids dancing with their parents in there. It doesn't happen all the time, but it does happen. And it made me very happy to see that.
Yeah. Every time I go in there, every single time I go in there, I run into somebody I know. It's a neighborhood joint. It really is. I see the same regular bartenders and servers. And family. Yeah, again, every time I go in there, I see kids in there. And you mentioned, are you just doing music now on Friday and or Saturday, or are you still doing some during the week?
Well, we have a funny entertainment permit. So we do it on Tuesday nights. Either Friday or Saturday, but I'm really leaning more on Saturday, and then the occasional Sunday. So we're starting a thing at the end of August called Sunday Suppers, and that is it's basically a preset. It's family style, kind of. It's a very Italian or Greek thing to do, really. So it's the big tables with all of the food on there, and it's a set price. So it's $19 for the adult, and then it's $1 per year for the kid up to 12 years old.
Cool.
And then it's a different theme each month, and then there's a band that goes along with that. So, for instance, if we're going to do, I'll just do for ease of conversation, if it were going to be Cajun, then we would have like a Zydeco or Cajun band in, and we'll do a big boil in the middle of all the tables. And then there's 2 to 3 seatings depending on what time of day or what style of food we're going to use on that. So that's sort of the answer to everybody's brunch, because brunch can get kind of boring to me. So those are the kinds of interesting changes that I'm, you know, doing. And then we have a separate menu starting in September for Monday nights only. So it's an industry night. And if you come in with your ServSafe card or your paycheck and you're in the industry, restaurant industry, you get an additional, I think it's 30% off of your bill. And then the menu is a little bit, it has some real standard stuff, but then it also has what we like to call chef food. So you'll have, you know, bone marrow and different random
foie gras, pate.
We have foie gras and pate all the time. But
all the time, that's right. It's not so chefy anymore. Michael, did you have a question for Demi?
I was just going to say, don't you all have movie night too?
We don't do them anymore. We don't do them anymore. It didn't work out for us. But it looked good on paper.
Yeah. Sure.
Wow. Yeah. No, a lot going on. Love both places. My husband and I were recently at both of your places. I wanted to mention something, Demi. When I ran into Michael up at Terranea for the launch of Dine Around the Peninsula, we were speaking with a restaurant owner. It's fairly new. I believe it's called Corazon. We were talking with him, and Michael was hammering him with questions, you know. and the guy turned to him and he said, "Okay, what's your if you could have one last Mexican meal, you know, what's your favorite Mexican restaurant?" And Michael didn't hesitate. Michael did not hesitate. He said Ortega 120. And the guy looked at me and goes, "Oh, really?"
Yeah.
Go ahead, Michael.
And I was going to say, well, and I guess what he was looking for was, okay, he knows what he can offer. So kind of getting an idea of what I would kind of set the bar as for a approachable but, you know, very well-done Mexican restaurant meal. And so by telling him that, he was like, okay, well, if you like Ortega 120, he had been there before. He had the food, had the cocktails. He was like, if you've been there and you've dined there, you liked it, you come to my place, you're going to like this. And you're going to like, you know, our margarita because we make all of our sweet and sour in-house. And, you know, we know how to mix it. And so it was almost like a bar was set. And I thought that was pretty cool because it was respectful. You know, it wasn't like he was, you know, trying to put anything down or kind of trying to trump his restaurant over another. It was like, well, okay, if you go there and you like this, then come here and you'll like this at mine.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I think I'm seeing a lot more. Well, for me, you know, the first restaurants that I was, you know, GM or operations or whatever were on the West Side. And in Santa Monica, you have, you know, a restaurant every 2 feet. And we all very much worked together and supported each other. And it was a really great environment, you know, and it doesn't sound, you know, it doesn't seem like it's going to be something that's kind of the norm. But I think in the restaurant business, for the most part, everybody is extremely supportive of each other. In the beginning of Ortega 120, we had a really amazing write-up from S. Irene Verbilia in 2008. And that was a huge deal then. And we had a line out the door that we were unprepared for. And Tommy and I are standing there with our jaws on the floor, and we ran out of linen that day.
Oh,
and
wow.
At the time, Shea Melange was still at PBN. And so I called Mike Franks and I said, "Can I please borrow some linen?" And he said, "I'll do you one better. I'll send you some linen. Send your linen down here." They sent it through the hotel laundry for us, Mike Franks did, and sent us back linen so that we had it for dinner. That's how supportive restaurateurs are, if for the most part, with each other. If you get one that's trash talking, I guarantee you they won't last that long. So we're very, very, very supportive of each other. Paul Hennessy was extremely supportive of me in the beginning of Ortega 120. We had some, we were trying to get an entertainment permit for there, and he spoke on my behalf. And I mean, absolutely supportive. Dory Giuliano, who they own Gitano's and now Betalino Kitchen, is the Vince and Andriana. A brilliant, brilliant restaurant, by the way. If anybody hasn't been there, they need to go to Betalino Kitchen.
Yeah.
But Dory was very, very helpful in the beginning of Ortega 120. We had a false lawsuit kind of thing happening. And she knew, she had information, she had information, knew how to handle it. And so, she came and she told me what to do, and this is what you do, and this is who you talk to, and this is how you fix it. And she was extremely supportive and she did Gitano on her own. And so, I mean, everybody that we have come in contact with Ortega 120 or that I have come in contact with A19 has been extremely supportive. And what that did, though, is it made it so that I had to pay it forward, didn't it? So when people come to me and they're having a situation in one of their restaurants nowadays, because of the successes of Ortega 120 and Heat 19, it happens a little bit more than I expected, especially right now. People will ask what my opinion is on something, and I'll step in and help. Now, you know, you have to. If you don't, you know, that's, A, I'm not going to be one that can sleep at night. If I don't, I'll feel bad. I think that we're very, very supportive of each other in this business.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I like to see with you know, things like restaurant weeks, and even also with just, you know, day-to-day operations. If you're a restaurant owner and you have a successful restaurant next door, then you're going to be successful too, because people are going to come. You know, people are going to, they're going to want to know, okay, this place is good and this place is right next door and they've got a crowd too. You know, what's going on over
yeah.
here? So,
good restaurants.
I think it all
good restaurants.
Exactly, just kind of lifts everybody up. A rising tide raises all ships, I'd say, and restaurants.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well. Speaking of, there's a new place right next to you, Azure Mediterranean Grill. And by the way, there's always a line outside of Ortega 120. You know, yeah. I mean, I drive by there several times a day, and there are always people outside waiting to be seated. And that space next to you doesn't have a great history. Places have come and gone. But I've been in there. I was actually there for I believe it was either a chamber event or a South Bay Business Women's Association event. And that was my introduction to it. And the food was so good. I ran back the next day and got lunch there. So I think those two next to each other. But now – that's the Mediterranean Grill, and I've always wanted to ask you this, Demi. Are you ever going to open a Greek restaurant?
No, I'm not Greek.
You're not? I thought Demetra, for some reason, I thought you were Greek.
It is. It goddess of the earth, but I'm not Greek.
Oh, okay. All right, then forget the Greek restaurant. But
yeah.
I do understand that. Are you going to be opening up a restaurant in El Segundo?
I am opening a restaurant in El Segundo.
Oh,
yeah. Word on the street.
I will tell you what I can. I have multiples in the works all over the place right now. But as far as El Segundo is concerned, yes, I am opening. I'm opening something smaller. You know, again, with the adhering to changes on things, I am structuring the inside of this restaurant in the way that it functions. Completely, so that it can have less employees. So this space is a little bit smaller. You're looking about 800 square feet, give or take. But it wasn't something, I didn't go looking for this. It was they came to me and asked me to do a few different things with them, and so we're. We were moving forward on a different location in El Segundo, and that fell through. It got purchased by a bank, and the bank actually wanted my space. So now I'm doing this other location with them. And if everything goes well, then I would assume that we'll probably open Thanksgiving-ish.
Okay.
And I'll be firm on that one in the next couple of weeks. So I have two different concepts in front of them right now, and as soon as they pick which concept, then it'll move forward, one being American and the other being Latin.
Wow. Now, the scene in El Segundo is just exploding, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing. This is on Rosecrans proper, too, so I'm very, mm-hmm. very lucky to have, Rosecrans frontage. So that, even though it's a small space, and small is good, but it's pretty cool to have that sort of frontage, especially when, you know, I mean, I figure if I can do it on the highway of Pacific Coast Highway where people are blaring past me at 50 miles an hour, or on this tiny little strip mall, you know, in Torrance, where if you look, you know, you're not necessarily looking for it, but all of a sudden you see it, then I'm pretty sure I'll be okay on Rosecrans.
You've got more energy than I do. And you mentioned something about Texas.
Yes, Texas is a financial move. So I have gone out there now three times, I am opening three different places, one right after the other. And I'm really excited about it. There, every concept I do, I won't duplicate or even just kind of tweak one of my concepts. I have to do something completely differently. I'm not going to open another restaurant that's similar to Ortega 120. I'm not going to open another restaurant that's similar to Hey 19. The only thing that would be similar is the way that they're operated and the way that you feel when you go inside. But these are, one of them is a very, very southern restaurant. I do have family down there. As I mentioned to you privately, my grandfather passed away not that long ago. And so when I went to Arkansas for his funeral, I really fell in love again with the South and the way how polite everybody is and how kind they are. And in Texas, the opening general manager that I had at Ortega 120, Charmaine, has been out there for about 4 years, and she's been all over me like white on rice to come out there and open something in Texas. And so Texas has quite a few entrepreneur programs, and they're very helpful with getting you business going in Texas, and so that's what I'm doing. And it's really cool to be doing it with Charmaine, and I'm excited. So the first concept down there will be a more Southern American concept, and then there's a separate Latin concept in there as well.
Wow.
Cool, yeah, that's amazing.
Wow. You know, we could use another hour, couldn't we, Michael?
Maybe 20 more questions.
yeah, that's what I was just about today. I've got a whole bunch more questions, but I want to give you a shot to ask Demi what you've got on your list.
Well, yeah, so, and you kind of touched on one of the questions that I had when you talked about opening new restaurants and how each one is different, because when you said you're going to be moving to Texas, or, you know, opening some shops in Texas, three new restaurants back to back to back. The first question I had was like, wow, are they going to be Ortega 120 franchises, so to speak? Are they going to be,
nope,
you know, Hey 19 redone? But and mm-hmm, one of the things you mentioned was that, okay, they're going to be all unique, but the management is going to be, it's kind of what is the franchise. How would you describe your management style? Because, I mean, to have the creativity around it to open, oh, my God, if you know, you go forward with three new spaces, maybe like five or six different shops that are all unique, but you're managing them the same. What's your management style when it comes to opening and running a restaurant?
I'm very hands-on, but I'm very direct, and I actually had a management meeting with the managers from Hey 19 and Ortega 120 yesterday. And in that, I talked about that I don't ever, I've never had a title on my business card unless somebody, you know, when I was a general manager or something, then the owners put it on.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't title myself. I have always mm-hmm. said that I work with and not that they work for.
Okay.
So that, when you, I think that the most important thing with management and or staff, I mean, I've got about 75% of my original staff from Ortega 120, that original being inside of the first 6 to 8 months, about 75% of them are still there. And that's not a common thing inside of restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about more retaining the employee. So I try to make it that they are as much a part of the decision-making as possible. And I treat them the same way I treat you when you walk in the door, mm-hmm, or anybody else that walks in the door. And I think that for restaurateurs, it is extremely important to remember that you are nothing without them.
Sure.
And, you know, your most important employees are your dishwasher and your hostess, and because they see every plate and they see every guest. And so it's important that your staff be, I mean, it's that, you know, that principle that production is based on morale. I'm a big believer in that. And it's also now for me, it's a lot easier because of the onset of new technology. So I can actually see the restaurants and their computer systems on my phone. So I in Thailand and make a and place an order, do comps and voids. I can see everything. You can call me and say, hey, I'm in your restaurant right now, and I can pull it up on the camera. I can see you, and I can send something to your table.
Oh, cool.
That's amazing.
Without calling the restaurant. Yeah. So that's made it a lot easier. But really, it just boils down to treating your staff well, you know, and equally.
They're family. They're family.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I said. You go into either place and you see the same people there for years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't, there's not a whole heck of a lot of turnover, which is wonderful. It also makes it, I mean, there's staff, there's two people at Ortega 120 that have keys to both of my restaurants, to my cars, to my house. They know the combinations to my safe. They know everything. And I trust them implicitly. If I'm out of town and something happens, I know that I can pick up the phone and call one of them and they'll go handle it. And they're, you know, I treat them with absolute respect and love them like family. You know, I've had people here for Christmas and Thanksgiving, and I think that that's what's really, really important. I would say to treat them the way you'd want to be treated.
Michael, did we just get a master class in the restaurant business?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm not going to say that I would want to open one, but if anybody was thinking about it, yeah, hopefully they tuned in and, you know, took notes. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, no. I have no interest in owning one. I just like to go to them and eat. That you know, that's my thing.
Sure.
I like to go. I love good food. And, gosh, we're running out of time. Really quickly, I wanted to ask you, Demi, where do you go to eat? I mean, I know that you always have – you probably eat all the time at your restaurants, but – where do you go? What are some of your local?
Well, there's a funny thing that happens when you own restaurants or that you're in management or operations of restaurants. You order food in your restaurant, but it's usually cold by the time you get to it because something has happened and you can't actually eat there. So I eat my food in my restaurants. But if I go out to eat and I get to eat something that's warm, or hasn't been sitting out for 45 minutes now because it's sitting on my desk. You know, I mean, whatever we give the customer is immediate, but when it comes to me, it doesn't work like that. So like I usually frequent places of people that I know, or that I'm friends with. So, obviously I hit, Gaetano's and Betalino, most often. I do anything that Michael Franks has got his hands in, I'll go frequent that. I don't go into Hermosa anymore because I got tickets the last three times.
yeah.
Parking's the worst down there, right?
Parking. I was 6 inches into the red. I got a ticket. I also hit a lot of the Japanese restaurants, the izakayas that are open late. We're really fortunate with that here in Torrance. I love that kind of stuff. I have a big Japanese whiskey collection at Hey 19, which is a lot of fun. And so when I go into these restaurants, I tend to know a lot about the whiskeys, et cetera, that they have. And they serve food until, you know, some of them until 4 o'clock in the morning. And so that works out really well for me. So when I go into those, when I get to go out after work, I'll usually go into one of those. And then I like random hole in the walls. You know, if I can find some random that doesn't have a sign on it, that's where you'll find me.
Wow. Cool. Wow. She's eating noodles at 4 a.m. and then getting up at 6 to take her son to hockey practice. I honestly don't know how you do it.
Or you go right at 4 to ice time. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. Really,
you know, I'm
really
going
quickly
to Quebec in December, so that'll be fun. Restaurant stuff.
Oh, boy. Well, listen, really quickly, give us the addresses for both your places.
Hey 19 Public House is 4525 Calle Mayor, or as we say here in the South Bay, Cali Mayor.
Cali Mayor.
It's hard to own Ortega 120 and say that way. But it's Cali Mayor, Torrance 90505. And Ortega 120 is 1814 South Pacific Coast Highway, Redondo Beach, 90277. And their websites are respective, so hey19publichouse.com and ortega120.com.
Terrific. Demi Stevens, thank you so much for joining us this week. It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And, of course, my co-host of the hour, my co-host for the hour, Michael Jenkins. Michael, thank you so much for sitting
Jackie,
in this morning.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure. I know I'm going to see you next week at the next big event, the next big happening thing. I know you're going to be there, so I'll be talking to you soon. And Demi, it's always a pleasure talking to you as well. Hope to see you soon.
Thank you.
All right, everybody, that's our show. Thank you for joining us, and be sure to tune in tomorrow morning for the South Bay Show Manhattan Beach 360. We're going to be talking about one of my favorite summer events, the El Segundo Art Walk. Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye-bye now.